We're launching another round of candidate forums today. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll be talking with the candidates in a variety of races around the state to help you make an educated vote on November 4th.
And we start with the race for governor. Well, it's mainly being described in the media as a battle between incumbent governor Scott Walker and challenger Mary Burke, the Republican and the Democrat. There are two third-party candidates on the ballot, giving voters an alternative choice to the major political parties.
We'll talk to both of those candidates over the next hour, beginning with Dennis Fehr. He's the People's Party candidate for governor, a party that he founded, and he owns a painting company in the Chippewa Valley. He joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Dennis, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you. Nice to have me. Nice to be here.
Thank you for being here. Well, Dennis, we're going to start with the question that we always do, which is, why are you running for governor?
Well, I'm running for governor here because, over the past years as I've been running my painting company, I've really become a lot more in tune with the politics here in our state and around the country. And what I found is that the Republican and Democrat Party are really failing to address a lot of the needs of the people here in our state. So this election, I decided that if I wouldn't be able to find anybody else reasonable to vote for, I would found my own party, and we would go about doing that, running and meeting the needs of the people with the People's Party.
You're a young guy. You're new on the Wisconsin political scene. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about your background.
Well, I tell you what, I'm 24 years old. I grew up here on a hobby farm in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. I studied manufacturing engineering and business management at UW-Stout, and I've been running a painting company here now for about 4 years. So I do a lot of traveling all over the state, doing estimates and working for different customers here and there. Politics has really become something that was interesting to me because I can really see that we need a new vision for going forward here in our state. And, I think we need somebody that can see both sides of the aisle and work towards pragmatic solutions to get problems fixed.
As you said, you're the founder of the party that you're representing, the People's Party. Can you tell us why you started that party a bit more, and more specifically, what it stands for, what the platforms are?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when we went about founding the People's Party, what we wanted to do is we wanted to bring together the best ideas all across the spectrum. As I see it, we have Democrats and Republicans right now in power, and both parties have very good ideas, along with a lot of the other third-party candidates and parties around our country. But what they fail to do is bring together the best ideas to represent the needs of the people. They tend to put their party first. So what we did is we brought in a lot of the financial points off the Republican platform, the social issues off the Democrat platform, and a variety of other issues that we've developed or we brought in from all other areas of the country. We have a 5-point plan that begins to address the needs, both financial and social. And those start off, our first point on there is what we call smart government initiatives. It would implement technology into our state's infrastructure to increase the efficiency of the way the government operates. I can run my entire painting company off of an iPad, and when we go into the DMV, I think it's kind of a shame that we have such long lines and are still filling out paper copies. So that's our first initiative to make
our
government more efficient.
Let's stick with that one for a moment. You want to modernize the technology throughout the government agencies in order to increase efficiency, to save money. Of course, mm-hmm. doing that costs money. How would you plan on funding that, and how would that work?
Well, it's just like a manufacturing company. Sometimes it costs a little bit to have process engineers or lean manufacturing engineers come into the plant. But what they find is that more often than not, they're able to work out so many of the kinks and areas that have been costing their company, or in our situation, our state, tons of money, that in the long haul, it's definitely worth it. In the meantime, we can do a variety of things. We're going to talk about legalization a little later on our platform. But essentially, saving the costs from an inefficient government will go a very long ways in paying back any of the money that we would need to make that happen in the first place.
It's possible that the next governor will face a budget shortfall on day one of being governor. What actions would you take to get the state's fiscal house in order?
Well, one of the points on our platform is legalization of marijuana. Now, on there, we have 3 points. We stress the industrial, recreational, and medicinal uses. Here in our state, we have a very large agricultural industry, and hemp actually used to be one of Wisconsin's agricultural products up until World War II. We were one of the largest producers of hemp. Now, the hemp is actually able to be manufactured into biodiesel fuels, plastics, clothing, a whole array of products. And I think it's an industry that we can grow here first, and we can make millions and billions of dollars off of tax revenue, very similar to what Colorado and Washington State have already done, except they have only stressed the recreational and medicinal uses. The industrial applications will actually have a much greater impact on our state's financial well-being than either of those combined. And I think that's one thing that we can do immediately and really start bringing that money in to help fund things like our roads or our schools, a lot of different programs.
And looking at budget issues overall and the job situation here in Wisconsin, jobs are shaping up to be election issue number one. And how do you plan on creating jobs in the state?
Running a painting company, you know, I realize it's really not as difficult to create jobs as it's made out to be. Our second point on our platform is actually tax reform. And one of the things that we've done is we brought together a bunch of people from all across the spectrum, colleges, all across the state to help revise the tax code. Right now, our tax code is extremely complicated, and it is inhibiting businesses from entering into our state. One thing that we can do to bring more businesses and jobs here is simplify our tax code. How we would plan on doing that is combining the progressive system that we have today with a flat tax system. So we have the progressive tax, and we're still bringing in enough money to fund the state and our programs, but we have the simplicity of a flat tax. Now, what that's going to do is that's going to save businesses all around the country that are looking to come to the state of Wisconsin to do business and provide and grow jobs here. It's going to save them money and time in filing their taxes and dealing with the state, so they would be more apt to come here. That would give them incentive to come to Wisconsin first and grow. I think that is a very good plan in creating the jobs here that we need.
So specifically, you think reforming the tax code will stimulate job creation in Wisconsin?
Well, absolutely. When you have a very simple tax code, when you have initiated a smart government and you've actually reduced the cost of the infrastructure and you've made it easier to adhere to the laws and regulations in the state of Wisconsin, you've improved the business environment for our state. And you've not only done it in the business environment, but you've done it in a professional and personal environment as well. So you not only have businesses that want to come here, but you have people that want to come here and work and live and raise their families. So the tax code plays a major part in which companies go to which states. Now you'll notice that Solar City and is building their new plant, or I guess, sorry, it's not Solar City, but Boeing moved their plant here from Washington State, or they were considering it. The taxes were a big part in that. Tesla is building the world's largest battery plant. I believe they picked Nevada to build that in. You know, these are all big industries that Wisconsin can capitalize, and the tax code, the smart government, these things will help bring businesses here. It's high-tech manufacturing jobs that we need to capitalize here first to bring our jobs in, and I think that's one way we can do that.
We're talking right now with gubernatorial candidate Dennis Fehr, who's running as a member of the People's Party. If you've got a question for Dennis or you're wondering where he stands on an issue, give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Today and tomorrow on the show, we're talking with the candidates running for governor here in Wisconsin. We've got Dennis Fehr with us now. He's the People's Party's candidate for governor. And if you've got a question for him, you can join us.
Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What issue do you want to ask the candidate about? What's important to you in this race that you'd want to get his take on? Again, 800-642-1234. Or you can email talk@WPR.org.
And Dennis, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line, Brad from Appleton, who asked, would eliminating or reducing taxes help create jobs? They tried it in Kansas, and that state has been among the slowest in creating jobs.
Well, what we've done is not just eliminate the taxes. We've actually revised the entire system and the collection process that goes along with it. So just removing some loopholes isn't going to incentivize businesses in the way that we would do that. What we would really like to do is completely overhaul the system and make it much simpler and easier. There's only a few states in the country that actually have a system as simple as a flat tax, and many of them do see the benefits from that. It is a very you know, it's an interesting thing to kind of look at. Tax reform is something that we've been trying to get done since Reagan, and I think it's time that we really take a serious look at how we can incentivize the businesses. I know personally that I run a business, and the tax code is very complicated, and my business is small in comparison to very large ones, so they also see the negative externalities along with a complex system, and I think it will definitely bring in more businesses.
We go to another caller now. Bill joins us from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hello. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm taking my call. Just a quick question for Mr. Spear. If I heard correctly, a few minutes ago, he said, talking about the tax plan they have, that he wanted to combine the progressive and the flat tax and get the virtues of both. But that sounds to me like, that sounds like tall but short.
Right. Is it contradictory, Bill is asking, to be both progressive and flat when you're looking at taxation?
Well, that's a very good question, Bill, and I appreciate that. You know, it's very hard to explain a complex tax system, or any tax system for that matter, without kind of a nice whiteboard to take a look at. And it is a little bit contradictory. However, once you get looking at the numbers, you'll see that once you've flattened out the tax brackets, you can actually continue with a progressive system. But the flat tax aspect of our system is simply in having a flat bracket, so that way you don't have as many deductions or credits. Them are what really make our system that we currently have very complex. So by eliminating all of those and going to a flat bracket system, you can still have it progressive tax along with that. It just simplifies the progressive brackets. And there's a few other things that we've done. Like I said, through the collection process of those taxes and how it's actually been implemented, that would also help to keep it progressive and very simple. It's kind of hard to explain over radio without having the opportunity to actually show you visually. That's something that we're working on right now on our website so people can get a much better feel for it.
And thank you, Bill, for that call at 800-642-1234. You can join us at 800-642-1234 with your question for Dennis Fear. And another issue that has been prominent over the past several months and years has been the minimum wage. Would you support or oppose raising the minimum wage in Wisconsin?
Well, the minimum wage is a very interesting question to look at. And the problem that I see with it currently is that raising the minimum wage, as the Democrat Party would suggest, doesn't actually fix the fundamental problems associated with having a reduced buying power. Now, if you study economics quite a lot, what you'll find is that due to the reduced buying power from inflation, that's why we want to increase the minimum wage. There, the Democrat Party does. How I would prefer to address this is by reducing the amount of money that the federal government has injected into our tax or into our currency. This way, it will increase the amount of money that the amount that the money is worth. This would actually allow us to essentially raise the minimum wage without having to pass a law to raise the minimum wage physically. This is called quantitative easing when they print money in economics, and it causes a lot of the inflation that we've seen with our current system, and it's something that we need to be able to regulate the federal government on. Our tax system also will allow us to do this through the implementation process of the collection of the taxes. That's one of the other big aspects in it. By changing the way that we've brought in the taxes from the state, we can then change the way that the federal government is paid, and that will allow us to have the power to tell the federal government that they're not allowed to print money and artificially deflate our currency. That is the cause of the minimum wage, and the minimum wage problem that we're having right now. And simply increasing the minimum wage will only further drive up inflation. We need to address the problem at its core, and the problem at its core is the quantitative easing that the federal government is doing. We need to find a way to stop that, and I think that is through the tax collection process.
Let's take another call now. Dan is with us from Dallas. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hi, Dan.
Yes, I'm calling wondering if you have any ideas about incentives for the industrialization use of hemp.
Okay, so, thank you, Dan. Any incentives for industrialization? You wanted to legalize marijuana to bring jobs and money into the state. What's your plan in specific?
Well, that is the first step, is getting it legalized, getting it decriminalized. Right now, our farm bill has in there provisions for hemp, and we need to address them first, obviously, to bring that in. But we have a lot of crop subsidies that would also be affected by this. And the only incentive that we really need is to decriminalize and legalize the hemp, the artificial hemp in our state. Farmers will be able to make a lot of money off this. That is what incentivizes them. We can do similar things that Colorado and Washington are doing. Businesses will come in. They will grow simply because they are allowed to do so. That is one of the biggest incentives. It's the money behind it. So businesses want to make money, and by allowing them to do their business, we're going to incentivize them. We have to start by making it legal. That's the first step.
And in terms of education, do you envision making significant changes to the state's education budget? And would you support an expansion of charter and voucher schools in Wisconsin?
The charter and voucher schools here in Wisconsin were initially set up in the greater areas, Milwaukee, Madison. I think that we should have more local community control. I went to school in Chippewa Falls, Chi High. Do we need a voucher school program there? I don't think so. There are communities in our state that could use them, and I think that's definitely best to have local control over who needs those subsidies. I would really hate to see three or four schools and then have them have to divide the amount of money up between them. We want to see better education for our dollar. We shouldn't be so focused on which schools our kids are attending. It is about the education. So I think the local communities know best, and we can allow them to have voucher school programs if they would like to. But really, we need to be pushing for a better education. And like I said, I think the local communities know best, so they'll know if they need the voucher or not. We should leave it up to them.
And another call now. Let's go to Larry joining us in Appleton. Hi, Larry.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question would be, because of the fact that there is a growing concern about the increasing inequality of not only income but wealth in our country and in the globe, as a matter of fact, I'm wondering if your tax plan takes anything like that into consideration. Would your tax plan reduce or increase the growing inequality?
Okay, thank you for the call, Larry. Dennis?
Well, what we did when we developed this tax plan, in order to make sure that it works with the numbers that we have currently, we actually set up all of the brackets based on exactly what we have right now to make sure that it is still bringing in the same exact amount of money. Now, what you do to make it equal and fair for everybody is when you're administering which brackets go where, you set it up so that it is equal by the percentage paid in for each bracket. So it actually allows you to keep the same amount of coming in that we have right now, because that's where the numbers were based off of, and yet then once you have that in place, you can set the brackets so that they're fair with everybody. One of the problems with the flat tax system is that it takes a larger percentage of the buying power from the working, from the poor individuals, which is why we actually started our first bracket off at a zero tax bracket, which would mean that our hypothetical first tax bracket, if you were to say from 0 to 25,000, you would call that your 0% bracket. So all of the taxes paid in, if you only made 20,000, you essentially wouldn't pay anything in under that bracket, but you also wouldn't get anything back at the end of the year. It takes out all of the credits and deductions. It also allows for a much simpler system. And when you jump up to your next bracket, it's a higher percentage, and then the brackets thereafter would decrease in percentage. This gives you the incentive to keep growing your business, making the right decisions to do that. It always is about creating a fair system. And when you have a flat bracket with no credits or deductions, it allows you to have much more transparency and essentially equality in your tax system.
Okay, thanks a lot, Larry, for the call. And one more quick call from Don in Lafarge. Hi, Don.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, there's a lot about what Dennis is saying that I like. I like the sort of pragmatic approach of looking at what's good from both parties and kind of picking them and using them, But I have a problem with, I guess, kind of be blunt, voting for Dennis, because right now one of my concerns is I don't like Governor Walker. I'd like to see him out of there. So I feel like if I voted for Dennis or some third-party person, that would be sort of a throwaway vote, because it'd be a vote away from, you know, Burke or, you know, the opponent. And I feel stuck with that. I feel like I kind of stuck with voting for a rather incomplete plan, as opposed to maybe a better plan that Dennis has, just because I don't really feel that, you know, it's almost like a catch-22.
Gotcha, Don. I think we've got the gist of what you're saying. And in our last moments here, Dennis, how would you respond to that?
Well, I tell you what, I hear that all across the state. And the issue that I really have with that is this. You know, we haven't made any progress in a very, very long time. And that is because we haven't really supported third-party candidates. So is it throwing your vote away to vote for a third-party candidate who has the possibility of really doing something? Or is it throwing your vote away to vote for one of the two main parties that we know will not accomplish anything in the next session, or sessions thereafter? That is the reason that we're in the position that we're in. It's not because of third-party candidates. We haven't had the opportunity all across the country to really take lead. It is because of the two-party system, and I would definitely say that by voting for the two-party system, you are essentially voting for the same thing that we have right now, which is gridlock and really not getting anything done. You know, I think we're a better option.
Dennis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was nice to be here.
That was Dennis Fehr. He's the People's Party candidate for governor of Wisconsin. On the other side of the news, we'll talk to the other third-party candidate running for governor, Robert Burke.
And tomorrow at 3:30, Democratic challenger Mary Burke will join us for a candidate forum. We offered Governor Walker an interview on the program. He was unable to join us.
And for more information on all the forums we're hosting over the next 2 weeks, head on over to wisconsinvote.org. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.